I remember when we first started this whole podcast thing, we just came up with the name God Journey. Some people didn't like it. I think it's perfect. This is not about me. This is not my journey. I am a supporting actor in a greater drama that's going on. This is about him.
Thinking outside the box isn't about whether you go to a meeting or not. It's about breaking free of the obligations of religious performance and living in the adventure of a relationship with God as our Father.
Two real guys talking about life, that's a good tagline.
Slinging freedom all over the place and making no apologies, this is The God Journey.
Well, I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I am still Brad Cummings.
And it's 3 weeks since we last did this. It's been a while, brother.
I was going to say, I feel like I've fallen off my horse. I wonder how to get back on.
A lot of water under that bridge. And
a lot of snow, actually, under the bridge.
For both of us. We both ended up in the snow at various...
Yeah,
we
got...
We need to coordinate our vacations well, but do we...
You were up there, and then we must have passed you on the 99. We got up there
passed
for
the, baton.
The epic 2-foot dump. Of snow.
Okay, you had put the snow there.
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't like what happened to the last podcast. They took that, someone made a ringtone out of that.
That was wrong. I don't smell good.
Yeah, that's taking advantage of my olfactory stuffedness.
I hope to never hear that ringtone on someone's phone.
That would be bad. I wouldn't enjoy hearing that over there in the Starbucks line.
And actually, it was a guy from Spain who did it.
Yeah, no,
that's an international ringtone.
Yeah, so, I just thought that was a cheap shot.
Well, we had kind of one of those days while we were on vacation, quote unquote. Got up at 5:30 in the morning to drive 5.5 hours to my friend's funeral, and drive back the same day after spending a few hours with the family and all. So,
how was that for you?
You know, it was weird because the son who had been an associate pastor at one point in his life, the son of the man who died, wanted to do the funeral. But he wasn't sure he could do the funeral. So he said, can you just come up there, and if I don't get through it, can you back me up? And also want you to share about my dad, and want me to read some letters from the family, want me to have a part in it. So I was kind of aware of all that going up there, just being aware that I may have to take over the service, although I seriously didn't think I would, because I thought he'd do fine, and he did do fine. It was tough. Made me for the first time think about losing my dad. Never really thought about it. Heard this guy talk about losing his dad. My dad's 85, and... still kicking in there, and I love my dad. I appreciate who he is in Christ as well as just being my father. So it made me think of that a little bit. But one neat moment, actually, when I heard a week before the funeral that he'd taken a serious downhill turn, and we'd had such a sweet prayer time. We talked about it on the podcast up there. Such a sweet time. I thought, you know, God really could heal out of that. Yeah. And... then when I got the call that said it didn't look like he'd last even a few more days. And I mean, it's 3 weeks from a guy walking into a hospital with some strange symptoms to dying with leukemia. I mean, I had no idea. But I heard that, and I sat down, I was praying, and I just said, God, it would have been great if you could have extended his life. And the next thought in my head was, I already did by 15 years. And I went, whoa, where'd that come from? You know, it's just kind of like the random thought. I already did by 15. I knew he'd had a heart attack. And the more I thought about it over the next few days, the more that thought, I mean, I have weird thoughts like that go away. This one just kept coming back. Every time I was thinking about Buck going up there, I gave him 15 more years. So I went up there and I knew Buck had had a heart attack some point back, but we had not been real close during that time. So I asked his son, I said, Buck's heart attack, how long ago was that? He says, 13, 14 years maybe. I said, was it serious? Was it like he just had a heart attack and went to the hospital? Or was it like, did you almost lose him? Oh, my gosh. He said, no. All the doctors said he shouldn't have lived. They had to life flight him out of this remote place where they lived and helicopter him down. And he should have died on the way to the hospital. Should have died once he got there because he had 5 blockages. I mean, it was a mess. And I said, wow. He said, well, and so I thought about that. And then I was supposed to get up and share during a funeral. I think, man, do I risk this? Do I really? I don't know this crowd. I don't know what his wife would think necessarily, but I just got up and said, I'm going to share something maybe a little weird. I said, I was praying for Buck, had this thought that, you know, God had already given him 15 years. And I guess that would go back. And his wife looks up at me and goes, that's exactly right from the front row. And I went, what? And then she just bowed her head again. So I just kept talking and did some other things about what Buck had meant to me. And what I felt like the 15 years was about was giving not only his wife a gift of 15 more years, but it was really for Buck, because Buck was at a place in his life where just about everything he had tried to, and I think I shared this last time when we talked about the podcast, everything he tried to do vocationally had externally failed.
Right.
Even though it had provided for him and he had survived and, you know, the amazing things God had done through that. But when they moved down here 10 years, 12 years ago to hang out with, I don't know, it was like 8 or 9 years ago. They moved down here, lived near us for about 8 years. They came down here just really depressed. Felt like God didn't love them. Felt like everything he'd done for his life had failed. And in those 8 years, Buck learned to live left. And I did too alongside Buck. I mean, that was a journey we were experiencing together and growing in that reality. And I just shared, I think the bigger gift was for Buck. There's things God wanted Buck to know on this side of life that would enrich him for eternity. And I don't even know what that means, but I say weird stuff like that because people who...
You know, it's so strange. I do think that we really do have a lot of one-sided prayer. It's our wish list. It's our, yeah. I want this, I want that. And it's not offered with the assumption God's already at work doing stuff.
Yeah.
So we're not entering into an already existing dialogue. We're kind of in a, sometimes just going, oh, you know, this is my new crisis. Lord, this is what I want you to do. And the perspective that encounter brings just shifts everything.
Doesn't it?
I mean, it's just everything.
It's like, well, it's tragic. Oh, it's horrible tragedy. This guy dies at 69. He's still young. And you're thinking, what, you got 15 more years? God's hand is in all this?
This is the celebration of 15 years of a gift.
So I sat down next to his wife at the afterwards. They had, you know, the family dinner and people, a reception kind of thing. And I sat down next to her at one point where enough people were gone to go, what do you know? She said, what do you mean? I said, the way you acknowledged what I said about the 15 years. Oh, she said, When I brought Buck home from the hospital, she said, his heart attack was 15 years ago this past November. Mm. And she said, when I brought him home, I felt like God said to me, I've given him back to you for 15 years. Enjoy them. Mm. And she said, I've never shared that with anybody. I've never said that to anybody. But she said, when this November crossed, I went, I don't know how much longer I'll have him. His 15 years is up. And she said, I had that thought. And so when all this has been happening, I'm going, wow, this just must be God's timing. And it doesn't make the parting any less tragic, I guess. But if God's hand is in it, it's somehow more bearable. That's yeah. what we were talking about and yeah. processing with her. And I just, gosh, that God would even make that known in two different ways to people, confirm that. It certainly gives me a sense of God's purpose behind the things in our lives that we think are almost chaotic.
Well, yeah. I mean, the reality is it's still loss.
Yep.
Something that was treasured and valued, appreciated, and enjoyed is now not there in the same way.
Yeah.
Okay. Just don't. I don't have that.
Yep.
I don't know that we know how to handle loss coming at the hand of God.
Yeah.
We treat that as, well, loss is wrong.
In fact, I got an email from a gal, and I met this gal originally. She's a high school student in a home I stayed in. And now she's graduating college. But she wrote me a note, said, read your thing about Buck. And, well, if God gave him 15, why couldn't God give him 25?
Well, why couldn't God give him 142?
Right. Why didn't God keep going with this? And I wrote her back and I said, you know, I'm going to post this on my blog in a day or so. But what I wrote her back and I just said, you know, we look at death very differently than God does. We look at death from our side of it, which is we lose somebody we care about, or that life is cut short, or all that could have happened, what the grandkids could have enjoyed. You know, we look at it from that side. From the other side of it, God is finally graduating us into the very thing he created us for.
The eternal.
An unstained eternity with him. I mean, that we were created not to live in this repressed, manipulated, destructive, flesh-ridden, sin-stained world that we live in. We weren't made for this.
Yeah, this is the womb of our eternal existence.
So God looks at it as a graduation of sorts. I'm bringing you into what I've always... And so from Buck and God's side of it today, it's all good.
Yeah. We could celebrate these things.
From
better.
His wife and kids and friends' side of it, it's... Oh. And I don't want to pretend that it's not for those left.
Painful.
But going away creates a real hole in their lives. That's true. Absolutely. And you get to mourn that and grieve that. And I'm not trying, oh, you should be happy now because Buck's happy. That's the dumbest advice we give people at funerals, to be honest. But yeah, the pain is very real on this side of it. But God will walk you through that. And for whatever people's lives are impacted by Buck's passing, God still has a future and a purpose in their unfolding, including his wife. I mean, they were married for 45 years or whatever. And yeah, it's tough losing your soulmate. It's tough. And they were a very close couple. and got the marriage thing right. They really did. They really loved each other and honored each other and worked together as a team and did all that well. For her going on, yeah. But does God still have purpose in the unfolding of the next chapters and pages of her life? He absolutely does. It's hard to see from here. It'll be easier to see up the road. You look back and go, wow, God does good things.
But Well, I mean, I think one of the things I feel like I've learned in the last decade or so is the interpretive lens through which we look at life. If I look at my circumstances and I try to figure out whether in this instance is God good or bad, man, you're going to come up with a lot of funky set of emotions and a lot of weird conclusions.
For sure. Absolutely.
Because you can't seem to manipulate your agenda all that well, not being an omniscient, omnipotent being. It's kind of hard.
Yeah.
But I don't think God is our adversary in that way, as if somehow I want a will and he's trying to thwart my will. I look at what goes on and I'm going like, okay, bottom line, just like 2 + 2 = 4, God is good and God is for me. That's what I know out of the scriptures. So how do I interpret what's happening to me, around me, or even by me? I look at it through that lens and it feels profoundly different. I am not one of these like destiny guys that, well, you know, it's just, it was meant to be. I don't know if it was. I really don't. I can't get on that fatalistic interpretation. But I look at what's going on. I'm going like, you know what? In spite of how this may hurt, in spite of how difficult this may be, I still am joined to a God who absolutely loves me, who is for me, and who is going to be at work in all things.
Yeah, even in the brokenness of this world.
And, yeah, and the brokenness of my sin.
Yeah.
He's going to be at work to transform me into his image. If I embrace that, I don't lose.
Yeah, and living to 57, you see a lot of that stuff. You see a lot of people. I mean, I know of a family, mother of 4 young children dies at 35 of a very strange blood thing happened in 24 hours, and she's dead and gone. And what tragedy is for the kids, what tragedy is for this. But then you watch how God's taken the kids on, taken the father on, taken. And you look back and go, gosh, life does go on and God's purpose unfolds. And tragedy is not the end of the story.
And I've got to believe in God's economy, this is not an oops, but this is something that as he becomes a father to the fatherless, he is engaging in the midst of that loss, bringing resources to care for. Doesn't mean it isn't a loss.
Right.
But it doesn't mean that there's a vacuum.
Right.
There's a presence of that same loving, interactive God who is involved in my life, in the affairs of what's going on, and he is going to walk me through.
Yeah.
And I think when that's settled inside, I'm not really sure what can undo you.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's not to say you won't have pain and you won't have struggle.
No.
I got a weird question this week from somebody who said, you know, I find that people who learning to live loved seem to have less compassion for people who struggle. And I went, that is not my experience. That is not. I think the very thing we're talking about, God has purpose in our lives even beyond what this world can deal out to us, doesn't make you more impatient with people who struggle. My goodness.
No, that becomes a little more accepted and expected.
Yeah, we all struggle. We are going to struggle. This life is painful at times, horribly painful. And God being in the midst of it doesn't mean, oh, I just sing and dance my way through it, you know, singing in the rain kind of Gene Kelly stuff. That is not true. Yeah. That's not real. That life is full of pain. And when his widow calls me on a Tuesday morning in tears after the funeral, and everybody's gone and all alone, I get that. It's not, hey, don't you know God did 15 years? You should be celebrating the 15 years. That'd be dumb talk to the person who's hurting today. Because her grief is very real.
It would be genuinely unkind because it's not meeting them where they are.
Yeah.
You can't demand someone be in a different place than they're at. And I look at the love of Jesus as he encounters people. He seems to meet each and every one of them where they are.
Yeah.
And then moves the needle.
Yeah.
And I look at the Old Testament. God is taking a nation of people. He's not standing in the truth revealed all in the New Testament and commanding, you idiots, over here. You know?
Yep.
He is with them in their wandering. He's with them in their forsaking him. He's with them in their obedience. And you see this eternal cycle as it moves down the road. It takes quite a bit of detours here and there. And you see a God who is patient and long-suffering walking the journey with them.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That is not – I mean, when you think of gods, you wouldn't exactly conclude, oh, I bet they're like that.
Right. In fact, the ones we made up weren't like that at all.
No, I mean, yeah. Clash of the Titans, loose the Kraken. I mean, it's like you look at – we see them acting with their capricious vindication of I am going to take my power and wipe you out.
Yeah.
And it's like I don't – the really cool thing about this glorious best-selling book called The Bible is that's not the main character.
Yeah.
Not like that.
And the overflow of God's life, as Paul talks about it, is going to weep with those who weep and rejoice with those who rejoice. And that's just, it's not going to get those who weep to try and rejoice. I think that largely we try to get people who are weeping to buck up and smile with these platitudes that we, religious platitudes, because we're uncomfortable with people's pain. And so we want you to, don't hurt. And we were telling this widow, in fact, and this is a good reminder, I think, for us all. The number one thing a person who's lost a loved one wants to talk about is that person. And the number one thing people don't want to talk about when they're with that person is that person. And I told Joni, people are not going to want to talk about Buck when they're with you. And the most thing you want to talk about is Buck. Buck was the most significant thing in your life that you've lost. You love hearing people talk about recollections of Buck, things that made that Buck did to make people laugh, things that Buck did that were a little idiosyncratic, like we all have. And I've noticed from a lot of widows and widowers that I've been with who've lost loved ones, they love to talk about that person.
Yeah.
But no one else does, because if you talk about that person, they might cry. Yeah, they might cry. Yes, they might cry.
And is that so bad?
But it's not a bad cry. It's a good cry. I remember doing
that
with...
It's a real cry.
This brother lost his wife, and she was 35 and young family. And a month later, we're driving down to something, and he's in the car. And I said, you know what? Let me tell you the funniest memory I have of your wife. And he goes, really? And I said, yeah. And I told about this funny story that was just hilarious. He was laughing, and then he started crying. And then we stopped at a gas station to get some gas or whatever, and the guys pulled me aside and go, what are you doing? Don't talk about her on this trip. We don't have to pay. What are you talking about? There's nothing more he wants to talk about. I'm going, really? I'm saying, yeah. Will he cry? Yeah, he'll probably cry.
You know,
but that's how God heals the memories and turns them from something painful into something to be honored and celebrated. And the only way through that is what we call grief. And it's a valid thing. So you weep with those who weep. You rejoice with those who rejoice. But you don't stop. Every time we're with friends who've lost loved ones, I'm always trying to figure out something to say about their husband and or wife or good friend that meant something to me so that we can re-celebrate them, even though they're not with us anymore.
Mm.
And I've never had, and I've always had people tell me, man, thanks for doing that. That is so helpful to me. Most people I know don't even talk about him or her anymore.
Well, I think people are afraid of, they're afraid of genuine, deep emotion.
Yeah, especially if it's painful. We don't mind rejoicing with those who rejoice. People are just ecstatically
nuts. I think that tends to happen in spite of us. If we knew how to stop that or guard against that because the other, you know, just waiting for the other foot to fall.
Right.
You know, I think what I see is a lot of people, they don't know how to simply go along with the reality of what is.
Yeah.
They're trying to manipulate it into something else. And I'm going like, I don't know how you do that.
Yeah.
I have lost the illusion that I'm that powerful. I'm not fatalistic. I'm not just accepting. I'm going to respond where I can respond. But I'm just aware of the tinier size of my muscles in light of the big reality of the world. And I'm not trying to just drop bombs everywhere to change everything. I'm I'm settling in to celebrate the fact that this is a journey I don't control, and I'm enjoying it. It's not painful. There are some really yucky things going on.
Yeah.
And I find them emotionally painful, but I find myself not feeling stuck. I feel myself being carried along, you know, like you're going down a river.
Yeah.
It's like there's something real here.
But I know you real enough, too, to know that when you think God does give you an assignment to change something, whether it's in prayer or fasting or whatever, you do that, too.
Oh, absolutely.
So it's not that there isn't time where we'll say, you know what, let's really hear what God's doing in this, and maybe God wants something greater going on here than the natural course of events is going to allow. That's what miracles are all about.
Yeah.
Absolutely, God does that. But we're not in I think the difference is we're not in control of that. I'm not, by any amount of Wayne's human effort, going to move God to do a miracle. That's really not what it's about. But if God set himself in his purpose and asked me to come alongside in the prayer and the my participation in that could make a significant difference in what's going on. But it's not having the responsibility of it, but it's having the participation.
I think because we cannot in any definitive way quantify that, people have a hard time living with that being nebulous. Well, doesn't my prayer matter? And it's like, yes, it absolutely does. Prayerlessness is not a helpful thing.
Right.
But I don't know that if you get 1,001 intercessors and you will all do this for these 4 days and this 20-day prayer prac here, that necessarily means, well, yeah, you're going to get your specific outcome.
Yeah. What kind of father is that, really? The son asked for something.
You only had 1,000. You know, if you had had that one extra guy, I would have done this.
Or even if you can get 1,000 of your friends to come over here and ask me that, then I will do it. So that's the next assignment. You got to get 1,000 friends over here to. What kind of God is that? It's not a father. Particularly if it's something God wants to do in us. Why?
It's not the guy I hang out with.
No, it isn't the guy I hang out with either. But I used to think that way.
I know.
I used to think, gosh, if we just, you know, we're just not praying right. If somehow we just got the right words in the right combination, this prayer would be answered.
See, but I think those things are the fruit of our doing it apart from the dialogue.
Yeah.
I really do. I think it's our looking at this and, you know, when Proverbs says, lean not unto your own understanding. I don't know about you, but I do find that one hard. I kind of do lean on my own understanding quite a bit. And I realize all the time, okay,
I've got.
Step back. Let's engage in the greater dialogue. Hey, God, I realize this is what I think. You say it differently than this? Do you? Because that'd really be helpful. Because unless I know you see this differently, I'm largely going to confuse the depth of my passion for your voice. Yeah. I'm going to call it you.
And the depth of my understanding for your wisdom.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know what God told me?
Yeah. And I just go like, I don't want to wield my will very much anymore, but I'm wanting to be able to be responsive without knowing everything.
We did that podcast a couple years ago called The Prayer Dance, which I still refer people to who don't get the whole prayer thing, which is, you know, the prayer dance. You can go, don't ask me where it is. You can go to the website. There's a search window, type The Prayer Dance, and
it would be a fun time to search anyways.
It will bring you straight to it. But it's that whole mix of he's the lead. But I'm not uninvolved. I'm not also moving with him to make this a dance. And yeah. God's partnership, friendship, love for us is to invite us into what he's about. But you're right. I think we've turned the New Testament into a set of rules that we try to use to manipulate the God we don't know. Instead of, no, I'm getting to know him and live in him. And there's things I pray passionately about because I feel like he's called me to pray passionately about because this could change something. And there's other things where I'm going, you know what? This is unfolding the way God wants. And all my prayers to the contrary are not going to move it. And that's a good thing, too.
Right. And would you believe that there are times that things are unfolding in ways that God doesn't want?
Yeah.
See,
Most of life.
Yeah. I mean, that's where I kind of go like, gosh, I don't know how difficult this is, but in my brain, those are two very real realities that kind of weave back and forth. There are some things that are, man, they're humming along, and I really feel like, wow, God, I'm not, I'm not driving that car in a way that makes it work like that. That's amazing. Yeah. How'd you do that? Yeah. And then there's other things I'm like, that's a total train wreck.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure I did that.
Yeah.
Or my lack of doing something.
I contributed to that.
Yeah. Or I'm just on that train and going like, oh, that's a bummer. And it's like part of me is going like, God's active in my life in both scenarios, and it really is the challenge of trying to lean not on my interpretation or my understanding, right, but into Him in a way that says, hey, God, which is going on here? You know, and it's not just – I do think that you can have a whole bunch of wonderful things go in a direction that sidelines you in something of lack – no consequence. And that doesn't mean, oh, well, that's just beautiful. So I don't think it's just that simple.
No, it isn't, because you can have circumstances go great and end up shipwrecked.
Yeah.
And you can, out of great tragedy, have God shape something in your character that would have never been shaped without that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so our whole idea of being able to decide, oh, what's good for me and what's bad for me.
We're not real good at that.
We're not good at that. Yeah. What we basically want is, I want a comfortable life. Please make me happy in the moment. But the moment makes us happy may not make us happy longer. I got in this conversation yesterday with a brother off our podcast we did, and you were talking about Jesus being a little boy in the 30 years of his life that we ignore. And we got talking and realized, you know, most scholars think, because Jesus' father is never mentioned after adulthood, that he likely died somewhere in Jesus' childhood. And we thought, you know, if he was the carpenter, taught Jesus to do some carpenting, maybe. Maybe this guy dies. Hey, this is all conjecture. We don't know.
Right.
What if this guy dies in Jesus' 29th year? It's just, you know, just not ready for your ministry to begin yet. I could heal him, but it's not time yet. I'm not healing my own father. And it was a wonderful little kind of, wow. We really have God so wrong that God would, you know, the time isn't right, so you don't get to be healed or whatever. But that God's purpose unfolds even in the chaos of humanity, which... to me, the greater miracle is, with all the human selfishness, with all the stupid things we do to each other, with all the betrayals, with all the selfishness that mankind does to mankind, and that seems to be an inexhaustible supply of something, God's purpose still unfolds on the planet in people's lives.
Yeah.
That, to me, is amazing. I sat with a couple yesterday. This woman raped multiple times as a child by her father and her father's relatives.
Mm.
Ended up marrying a drug dealer. He'd murdered some people. I mean, her story was as horrible as any you'd hear. And yet she was in a place of triumphant transformation where now she is living differently inside a relationship with God. The pain of all that has been addressed in her, at least by everything I could tell in the conversation with her and her husband. And now her passion is, how do I help kids who are caught in the same cesspool I was caught in know the God I know?
Hmm.
And I'm going, gee, that's just, it's a beautiful story. How does God do amazing things out of the chaos? To me, is the story. It's not, why doesn't God fix everything we want the way we want it? It's, how does God do anything wonderful out of chaos of our own stupidity?
I was giggling a few minutes ago. I was remembering a cute little video on YouTube where it's about this little kid and he's talking to his mom. And he's going, I don't like you all the time. I mean, he's just being honest. I like you when you give me cookies. it's just this raw, selfish interpretation of what's good and what he likes. And I like you when you give me good stuff. Yeah. But I don't like you all the time. And it is just, it's got like 20 million views because you're going like, I think most people look at that like, man, that's true. But I think that's what we do to God. I don't like you all the time. And it's like, if we can, I mean, I think opening up to look at loss and to not impulse into the conclusion, God's absent here. Somebody in heaven's asleep at the wheel because I'm experiencing pain and I have what I love is now not here.
Right.
That's painful. Those emotions are going to be harder to deal with if the real dialogue of reality was, I understand the loss. Let's deal with the loss, but please see it in light of the gift of the last 15 years that you can appreciate.
Yeah.
That honestly will produce a lot of different real emotions. I don't have to manufacture. I don't have to confess.
Right.
That truth is going to lead me to a different place and allow me to process life, the pain of it, differently. Doesn't mean it's not there.
Right.
I don't have to be afraid of – I mean, I don't mind crying. I don't mind hurting. I really struggle with that when I get lost and I have that sense of abandonment.
Yeah.
That hurts.
That's why our conversation might well be, I don't like you all the time. But God's conversation with us is the game I'm playing with Amy now, as we're talking about, because I got this little game with Amy, my granddaughter, where I just say to her, I love you, Amy. I love you all the time. And her answer is always, no, you don't, Grandpa. You only love me one time. And I'm going, no, I love you all the time. No, you can't love me all the time. I'm going to stop you. And my conversation, nothing you can do, darling. Nothing you can do is going to stop me from loving you. I love you all the time in every way, and I will for the whole of your life. And we're playing this game with her. I'm really trying to say to her the things I think Jesus says to us all the time, and we don't believe. You only love me when I'm good, because I only love you when you're good. You only love me when I'm good. We have this very distorted view of the love of the Creator, and that's the whole incarnation of Christ was to come to tell us,
all the time.
All the time. I love you when you screw up. I love you when you do stupid stuff. I love you when you hurt people I love. I still love you. I want to win you out of those things. I want to win you out of the sin that makes you a dangerous person in the world. But my love for you never stops.
Why do you think that's so hard for us people to really lay hold of? Because, I mean, I don't think that's an easy one. It's, oh, okay.
Yeah, no,
I mean, if that settled in, I just know the transformation, the power that that brings to the all of life. When I'm aware actively, I love you all the time.
We've talked before. That's got to be more than theology. I'm not going to convince my head that's true. I need to know it in my heart.
When that's alive in my heart, I got to tell you, the blues are bluer. The sun is more amazing. The clouds, even with the rain, are awesome. You just go, something's different when I know that.
Yeah.
But it is so hard for most people. They just want to go, no.
Because human love is so conditional, isn't it? I love you when you do nice things for me, and I don't like you when you've caused pain in my life. That's how we have meted out love from a human. I don't think we know a love apart from that until we begin to know this God kind of love, which is, you know, we know love not because we loved him, because he first loved us. And God's loving for us isn't for what he can get out of us. But religion is always changes God into what he can get out of us is makes you highly favored. So we even take the religious view of God and we play it back into this. You're loved when you're good and you're not loved when you're bad. We play that game. And so it's very hard for us. You mean God can love me when I'm doing a really mean thing to a friend? Yeah. Doesn't love what you're doing? Wishes you would stop? Doesn't want you to be the exporter of pain in the world? But the prodigal son running off from the dad is not less loved. He's just living like he is. Father still loves him completely, not validating him, not validating what he's doing. But I love you, man.
Yeah.
And I hope you come back to that reality, because then you'll be less a danger to yourself and you'll be less a danger to the people around you when you know that the Father loves you and you can live inside the reality of that love. But most of us have never been taught that.
Yeah.
Most of it, it's that performance treadmill we talk about so often. I'm loved when I'm good. I'm loved when I perform well. And I'm not loved when I'm not. And that's the way we treat God, in the same way. If you're giving me good stuff, I feel loved. If my husband's dying, I don't feel loved. I don't feel like you care about me. And then when any tragedy hits, we turn on the very God who loves us. We turn on him. And then we live as if we're not loved. And any pain is harder to live through not loved. I love what you said.
Yeah.
You know you're loved. The blues are bluer. The storms are no less stormier, but you're safer inside them with him. Yeah.
Do you remember the movie Hook?
Man, you're a movie guy.
I am.
Yeah, I do. I didn't like it, but I remember the movie.
Oh, you did? Oh.
We and I don't have good taste in movies, obviously.
No, you didn't see it with me. I would have helped you love it.
I don't talk during the movie, so no, it wouldn't be true.
Afterwards, I would have made you love it. You know what's so amazing to me is here you got Peter Pan, Robin Williams, and with his kids, there's this sinister plot of Hook to convince them that Peter doesn't love them. And the littlest girl, no, there's no way you are convincing me that my daddy doesn't love me. And the older boy gets sucked into that, and he becomes this little Hook. And it's like it's this sinister plot of trying to estrange his children
sure.
from his love. And you look at this, and it's like, I mean, I think that is the number one plan of the enemy.
Oh, absolutely.
It's like he's wooing us away like, well, he don't love you because look at this list of stuff. He says you shouldn't do that. Don't you want to do some of those things? I'd let you do some of those things.
Look at the garden. Adam and Eve, God doesn't love you. God doesn't want
he's
you
holding
to
on out, yeah, holding out on you.
It's the same thing.
I think when you can step out of that seduction and trap and you can step back into and relax into, I love you all the time.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, life on this planet has a whole bunch of different possibilities.
Yeah, and that's what destroys most human relationships too. When you see it in a couple, when they start looking for proof that their spouse doesn't care about them, you can twist everything you want into something sinister.
Yeah, and when someone wants to draw that conclusion,
nothing
you can do to stop it.
No, it's you guys don't love me anymore. You guys don't want me to do. I'm going to do it. And once somebody goes down that road, no matter what you do, gets twisted into something evil.
It gets thrown right back at you.
Not only your own mistakes get twisted. That's easy enough. But then things you genuinely do to care about somebody. Oh, you're just trying to manipulate me. You're just trying. I've seen this happen with couples over and over. I've seen it happen in human relationships. The biggest work of the enemy is to convince someone they're not loved by another human being or by God himself. And then, boy, he gets a field. He can twist that into anything he wants to once you've decided that you're not loved on your terms, therefore you're not loved. And then all manner of evil proceeds from that.
Yeah, and what do you gain out of drawing that conclusion? Because I can see very clearly in my own life
the illusion of control.
Really?
If I think you're going to hurt me, I'm going to hurt you first. It's the illusion of control. All you do is you become toxic in the world.
And then I can manipulate around that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I think anyway. I could be wrong.
Because I look at the snare, the bait the devil puts out, and it's like in most of those relationships, there's things I can interpret that you're just like, oh, that person doesn't love me.
Yep.
And I'm just going like, what positive value does any of those conclusions I might draw, as if I could know the answer?
Yeah.
I don't see anything positive that comes out of them. And I want to be in a place where it's like, you know what? No, that relationship might not be amazing. No, that person may be selfish in their orientation.
Yeah.
But if I am drawing from the I love you all the time, I don't really need a whole bunch of other little human beings to fill that cup if the Niagara Falls reality
yeah.
is washing.
Yeah.
I can extend grace into a relationship that perhaps is insecure and one-sided, but I have a resource I can give that invites something different.
How would Jesus survive without that? And you've got Judas betraying you, Peter denying you, everybody scattering. How does Jesus survive if the love of the Father isn't enough? You're not really going to love others if you don't find that in the Father first, because when people betray you, you'll just end up alone again. And I think Jesus was able to draw on the love of the Father. So
yeah, I think trying to be a Christian without the love of God is exhausting.
Yeah. Hey, before we go, got an email from Kenya and thought we'd just kind of update folks on the stuff there. We've been able to send quite a bit from a lot of you have sent us some nickels and dimes, and some have sent some very generous gifts. We've been able to help a bit in Kenya move some of their need, and they've written back some wonderful thing. Just said, we want you to know how much we're blessed by everything that you've sent, and that every cent has been spent as we said it would be. We appreciate the new car. God has finally answered our prayer, and we have not experienced any breakdown of this vehicle. That's a big deal, because the other one broke down 10 times a day. So
yeah, it came with a full-time mechanic sitting in the car.
He says it's very special that it can be owned by the ministers in Kenya. And I think ministers is used in a broader sense than the ordained folks. And it can move regardless of the terrain. And they're also saying you need to get new insurance now for it. It's expiring, and they need a significant amount, obviously, because theft is a big deal over there. So insuring a car isn't cheap. Mm. We knew that going in, so we're hoping to help there as well. He said, about the children, I'm working out with my fellow team, and we will send you information. As we have been making the evaluation, there are lots of problems, especially with malaria, typhoid, and hunger. If there's any way to help these starving families, my brother, please do so. We need to buy mosquito nets for every family, especially this rainy season. Michael has been taking some family to the hospital every week. Just the kind of need. Mount Elgon, and met some people from there, is far worse than anywhere else, so your support is greatly appreciated. So we're continuing to be a conduit for folks that want to send money that direction. So you're welcome to do it.
Cool.
And there's more information at the website and at lifestream.org. And you and I are off for a trip to Nashville together.
Yeah.
Tomorrow morning. And we just found out we've been complimentary upgraded to first class.
How about I like that? You, Wayne. This is great.
How about that? United Airlines comes through.
I normally sit in the rear of the plane.
Well, you're going to be, I think you've got 1A or 1B.
Yeah, so baby. I'm going to knock on the door.
You can talk to the press. No, you don't knock on the door.
Yeah, they shoot you for that.
It's like going in the bathroom with the matches. It's just not wise. You just don't do it these days.
Yeah, I don't need to do that.
Yeah. But we're going to take this. We're actually going to do a live podcast with a group of people. First time we had a.
In White Bluff.
We always wished that at some point we were streaming live and be able to take phone calls from folks. But then you and I do so much talking. I don't know how anybody would ever get a word in edgewise. But we're going to give it a little bit of a shot in Nashville. So we're looking forward to seeing the folks out there. And some of you are listening to this. We'll see you in the next day or so.
Down the road.
Thank you for joining us today on The God Journey. If you'd like to participate in the conversation, you may do so at our website, thegodjourney.com.